So I don't have a way to predict the future. I just think that we have to go into this eyes wide open.
The head of the U.S. Pacific Command says North Korea remains the main threat to the Asia-Pacific region. It's Friday, March 16th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Remember, you're part of the program. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, we mark 50 years since the My Lai massacre in Vietnam. The UN forms a special panel to monitor North Korea. And how are Syrian refugees faring in Australia? That's all on today's VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. The head of the U.S. Pacific Command says that the United States has no plans for a limited attack on North Korea, but expressed doubts about the outcome of a proposed meeting between President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Admiral Harry Harris told the U.S. Senate Armed Services Committee Thursday that while what he called a range of options are being developed, he knows of no plans for a so-called bloody nose preemptive strike.
We have no bloody nose strategy. I don't know what that is. The press have run with it. I'm charged with developing for the National Command Authority a range of options through the spectrum of violence. And I'm ready to execute whatever the president and the National Command Authority directs me to do. But a bloody nose strategy is not contemplated.
Last week, President Donald Trump announced plans for a summit with Kim Jong-un, tentatively scheduled for some time in May. It would be the first such meeting between a sitting U.S. president and the leader of North Korea. Admiral Harris told the Senate committee that he was encouraged by the prospect of a summit, but said North Korea remains the biggest security threat to the East Asia and Pacific region.
We've never been in a position where our president has met with the leader of North Korea ever. And so I don't have a way to predict the future. I just think that we have to go into this eyes wide open.
Admiral Harris said he believes Kim Jong-un wants to reunify the Korean Peninsula under his leadership and is using his nuclear program to gain respect, status, and security. The Trump administration has said it prefers a diplomatic solution to the North Korean crisis, but that all options remain on the table. Admiral Harris also told the committee that China's removal of presidential term limits could see its leader Xi Jinping stay in power for decades and was a harbinger of China's strategic threat to the region. Harris said that China seeks regional hegemony and wants to push the United States out. He said China's development of hypersonic glide weapons and stealth fighter jets pose a significant threat to the U.S. He also expressed concern about Beijing's militarization of islands it has built in the disputed South China Sea and its acquisition of icebreaker ships, even though it has no Arctic border. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Analysts say Trump's tariffs may end up benefiting China. Nepal authorities struggle to identify plane crash survivors. Critics say Indonesian law protects lawmakers from graft probes. Ahead of polls, Malaysia's Najib gives cash to staff of state-linked firm. And the Taliban's studied silence on dialogue raises peace hopes in Pakistan and the U.S. Extended coverage of these stories and more is on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. Thanks for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Today, March 16th, marks the 50th anniversary of what is known as the My Lai Massacre, when U.S. soldiers on a mission to find and destroy a Viet Cong unit instead attacked a village and killed 504 civilians, most of them women, children, and old men. Pham Thanh Cong was thrown into a family bomb shelter along with his mother and siblings. American soldiers threw grenades into the shelter, killing everyone in Pham's family and leaving him unconscious with head and torso injuries.
Khi mà ẩm tôi lên là mình đầy máu.
When my father picked me up, I was covered in blood, with pieces of flesh and hair of my mother, my siblings were all over my body. My clothes were ripped. I had a lot of injuries on my head and body.
The incident became the most notorious episode in modern U.S. military history, but it was not the only such massacre. U.S. military records describe 300 other such cases of incidents similar to My Lai during the Vietnam War. A special memorial has been dedicated to the victims of the massacre. Relatives and well-wishers place incense on the altars of the shrine. Nguyen Minh Tri is the director of the Cultural Department of Quang Nai Province.
According to Vietnamese tradition, those who pass away should be honored on a family altar. When it comes to the anniversary of their death each year, family members would place incense and offer a meal on their altar. Unfortunately, for the 504 people that were killed in the My Lai massacre on March 16, 1968, they were all buried in mass graves and several families were all killed. That's why we dedicate this shrine to the victims, to honor them.
American Vietnam vet Mike Hasty visited the memorial site.
This is what my country did to the Vietnamese people. And I carry a lot of guilt and a lot of pain because of that. I carry a lot of shame for what my government did.
The U.S. Army would later charge 14 men, including Charlie Company leader Lieutenant William Calley, Captain Ernest Medina, and Colonel Orrin Henderson with crimes related to the events at My Lai. All were acquitted except for Lieutenant Calley, who was found guilty of premeditated murder for ordering the shootings. He argued that he was only following orders from his commanding officer. Calley was given a life sentence, but his sentence was reduced upon appeal to 20 years and later to 10. He was paroled in 1974. Vietnam and the United States normalized diplomatic relations in 1995, and the U.S. is one of Vietnam's top trading partners. Historian Yung Chung Wook says that the greatest outcome of the massacre is that both nations have learned their lessons.
As we organize the 50th anniversary for the crimes committed by the U.S. Army in Son My, not very far from there, a U.S. aircraft carrier docks in Da Nang for a friendly visit. The war has ended and both nations have learned its lessons. The greatest outcome of the lessons is for two nations to come close together in friendliness and share responsibilities.
For My Lai survivor Pham Thanh Cong, there is sadness, but not bitterness.
Tôi sẵn sàng tha thứ cho họ và gác lại cái quá khứ đó.
I am ready to forgive them and move on from the past. And I want them to do good deeds to make up for what they did. I don't want to think heavily about it or hold on to hatred. Let bygones be bygones.
To see a special photo collection on the My Lai Memorial, visit our Facebook page, VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on this Friday. I'm David Byrd in Washington. The UN Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights reports it is making progress in setting up a new system to monitor and document human rights violations in North Korea, particularly those that may amount to crimes against humanity. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UN Human Rights Office says it is moving ahead with the so-called Accountability Project for the DPRK, which was mandated last year by the UN Human Rights Council. The project calls for establishing a central data bank where information and evidence of human rights abuse in North Korea can be stored. Deputy High Commissioner Kate Gilmore, who has updated the Council on progress, says a high-level expert to lead the project has been appointed and hiring is underway for four more staff members who will be based in Seoul and Geneva. She says work has begun on the electronic repository, the first independent and comprehensive information system on human rights violations committed in North Korea.
It will bring together a wealth of information from a wide range of actors. It will be publicly available, allowing for comprehensive and annotated searching. And this tool will facilitate the building of cases that eventually could be used for the purposes of criminal prosecution.
Gilmore says she hopes the recent thaw in relations between North and South Korea during the Winter Olympics will open other channels for serious discussions with North Korean authorities regarding human rights concerns. She says an ultimate aim is to provide justice for the victims. North Korea has not given its reaction to the UN project. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Coming up, we'll hear how Syrian refugees are faring in Australia. You're listening to VOA Asia. International resettlement experts from seven countries met in Sydney this week to look at ways to help millions of people displaced by the war in Syria. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports the summit will also release the first results of a research project looking at how 12,000 refugees from the conflict have adapted to life in Australia.
A study funded by the Australian Research Council has tracked the lives of 200 Syrian and Iraqi families who've been resettled in the state of Queensland. They were part of an emergency intake of refugees from the Syrian crisis and arrived in Australia in 2016 and 2017. The survey found that while most were happy to forge new lives in Australia, there was deep frustration at the lack of employment. Jock Collins, a professor of social economics at the University of Technology Sydney Business School, was part of the research team.
There is a frustration about work. They're very highly educated people, dentists, sort of pharmacists, engineers, major positions in multinational corporations. So very, very sort of strong achievements in a professional life. They're anxious to get going here and they find they haven't been able to do that. There's a frustration about that. Basically, the key point is that getting a job is difficult but critical.
Typically, refugees in Australia suffer disproportionately high rates of unemployment. The University of Technology Sydney estimates that only about 17% of recently arrived refugees in Australia are working. Community leaders worry that those statistics can influence the way the broader Australian community considers refugees. Atema Tema, Sudanese community leader who arrived in Australia in 2002, is a university graduate. He attended the Sydney Resettlement Summit and believes high rates of unemployment can stir negative perceptions of those fleeing persecution.
If you are someone who lives in the suburbs and who has never met a refugee and you just hear refugee stories, which is the majority of the population, then you think that we shouldn't have refugees because they're hopeless. Those are the stories that you hear in the media. And a lot of people who just get information from the media, which is the majority of the Australian population, believe that refugees are not good for Australia, that they are not contributing.
Australia typically grants refugee visas to about 14,000 people each year through official humanitarian programs. Asylum seekers who arrive by boat have been detained in offshore camps run by Australia in the South Pacific. They've been told they'll never be allowed to resettle in Australia under a strict policy designed to stop asylum seekers risking their lives at sea. Critics of the policy say it's inhumane and breaches international law. Phil Mercer for VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can also find us at voanews.com. Be sure to let us hear from you. You can log on to the VOA Asia Facebook or send us an email. Our address is voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Rob McLean. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy the day.